Hey everybody, this is Stu Smith with another special two through and after show, and we have special guest Nick Koumalatsos, former Marine Recon and Raider. And did I get that name right?
You actually did. I'm impressed.
Oh, good. I've heard it a few times. I've watched you on video because you got a great YouTube channel and you make some killer videos. So
I appreciate that.
Very impressed with your video making skill and everything that else that you're doing, which we'll get into. But really what this show's all about, Nick, is we just want to kind of hear about your journey. You know, who were you? And the first question always starts off with, who was Nick Koumalatsos before you joined the military? What was Nick like as a child and growing up?
So there's definitely a couple, bunch of chapters in that stage.
Yes.
My parents always say pre-puberty, my parents say I was such a sweet boy. And then during puberty, I think they were like, I wish we could just get rid of him.
Yeah, you know, there is something about testosterone poisoning, I like to call it,
that tends definitely to
come along with that age.
Around that time frame is when I started getting in trouble with, and I actually talked about this on the Mic Drop podcast, was, and I just started getting in trouble with the law, got running around with some, you know, quote unquote gang, you know, involvement, and started breaking the law.
Where was this? What part of
the Florida?
Okay, I grew up in Florida too, so I'm not far from.
So I grew up. Well, I mean, I grew up all over. I feel like my mom was running from the law. I don't know if she had active warrants because we moved every 6 months. So switching schools every 6 months and whatnot. But finally, we ended up back in Panama City, Florida, for my high school years.
Yeah, I'm a North Florida raised kid as well.
Where?
Suwannee County.
Where is that?
Suwannee River. So a little bit further east of Panama City. Like we would drive probably about an hour and 45 minutes, roughly.
Like close to Tallahassee?
Just on the other side of Tallahassee.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So Panama City Beach in the 90s is not some place that you wanted to raise your teenage boy.
Yeah. Could see that.
And so there's a lot of opportunity to get in trouble. So anyways, I did that for a few years. And landed in juvie a couple times. And that's when I realized, I don't think this is the place for me. This is not what I want out of my life.
Being on this side of the law is not the place. Yes.
No, this is going nowhere real fast. So, and then something switched, a light bulb switched. And I just started, I started working hard. I was working even through that. I had a full, like a job and going to school, like 11, 12 years old. But once I got out of that, my whole brain just shifted to kind of hard work and progression of life.
Hang on a second. This was all pre-teen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I had two. Yeah, sorry. I had two.
I was thinking you're like 17, 18 years old.
No. By the time by the time I was 12, I actually had two felonies. Yeah.
Wow.
Could you imagine being my mother?
Yeah. Wow.
That's two felonies. Yeah. And we'll kind of get into that later. Cause they didn't go away. And a lot of people, like I did a video on YouTube talking about it and they're like, oh, well you were under 18, you know, that's all sealed. I'm like, no, man,
no, it's not.
It was not. No, it's not. Cause you go talk to a recruiter and they're like, sorry, bub, like have a nice day. There's the door, you know?
So I imagine you had to deal with that issue coming up, as you made that decision to serve.
Yeah. That was a 2 year journey in itself, but something clicked in me and I just wanted more out of my life. And so around, you know, 13 years old, I was like, I'm going to start working and like hard even more, you know, like, so I would go to school, you know, and I kind of had to rebuild my school because I missed a lot of school because I was getting in trouble and I got kicked out of one school. And so I skipped some grades and then I got put into an alternative school. Which is funny. It's in Panama City, but it was like back then it had like metal detectors. It reminded me of something like at like some sort of inner city school, but it had barbed wire around the fence. It looked like a prison.
Wow.
But they told me, they said it's a year. You're going to do ninth grade in this school. And, if you make it through the year, we're going to put you to the regular high school. And I was like, I'm not doing doing a year in this school. I'm out. So I was like, if I keep my grades up and I can do everything that I need to do, but in 6 months, will you transfer me out and let me go to the regular high school? They're like, yeah, but you can't do anything wrong. You can't get in a fight. You can't miss a Smith. You can't be absent. Nothing. No marks.
Wow. And that's hard to do there, because there's always somebody wanting to fight.
Oh yeah. And I was the guy in the corner, like trying to eat my food, and like there's people were messing with me, and I'm like, oh man, this is so bad. Like, I want to, you know, stand up for myself, but you know how it is. Like, yeah. You stand up for yourself, you're in the wrong just as much. I mean, the system's broken, but
sure.
You know, but I navigated my way through it, and you know, I did some tap dancing and some, and I talked smartly.
Social engineering, I call it.
Social engineering. And I got out of there in 6 months. They're like, hey, you didn't get in a fight. You were never late. And I was out. And anyway, so I made it over to the regular high school. But then I only did a year and a half over there. By the 10th grade, I finished the 10th grade, and I had a job making on the beach. Do you remember Bay Point Marriott? And
Yeah,
so I worked there as in the morning. I worked as the audio visual tech guy for the console thing, making I don't know, I was 16 making $15 an hour in the 90s. Okay.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
And then in the night I would have a 30-minute lunch break. So that was like 6 to 2, and then 2:30 to 10, I was a bellman. And you could imagine the tips.
Oh yeah.
From that place.
Oh yeah. Sure.
So when it was time to go back to school for 11th grade, I was like, there's no way I can give this money up. This is not even a smart business decision to go back and quit this job when I'm making, up to $1,000 a week.
Nice.
You know, as a 16-year-old. So I went and got my GED and kind of just moved on with life, moved out to the beach, and kind of became an early adult.
Wow.
And then that's when it hit me. Like when you're 17 years old and you've accomplished some stuff and you live in a beach house and you've got a couple jobs and what else? And I hit this, what's next? I hit this panic moment because I accomplished everything. I'd gotten out of trouble. I'd kind of cleaned up my life. And I was like, I very quickly saw myself being there and doing the same thing in 20 years. And I was like, this is bad.
Right.
This can't be the meaning of life. Like, this can't be it. So that's when the military kind of, that's when the military kind of kicked in, the whole life of adventure.
All right.
That might've been a poster at one point for the Navy or for the Marines. Like, sign up, life of adventure.
Yeah. You know, obviously your history created some problems for you, and I can't tell you how many people I get that are looking for some kind of moral waiver or GED waiver.
Oh, I'm sure.
How did you get through all that?
I made the decision. So my grandfather on my mom's side was in the Army, and he was 2 tours in Vietnam, a tour in Korea. He retired as a sergeant first. He was actually drafted in Korea and then retired as a sergeant first class. Ended up getting a Bronze Star in Vietnam. So I had always looked up to him and kind of what he had accomplished. But the Army, for some reason, at that current time, just didn't appeal to me. And now I know all the reasons why. it just wasn't my branch. So I saw the Marine Corps, and it just looked. Their marketing at the time, if you remember, they had that officer like fighting dragons and with swords.
Oh, yeah, that was the best.
You know? Yeah. So
I remember this one poster they had that was this jacked Marine with a rope over his shoulder.
Oh yeah, no, he went UA. That guy, I think he was a recon guy. No, he wasn't a recon guy. He was a Motor T guy that they got to take that photo. But I think the story, I mean, who actually knows? But right. The story that I heard is that dude, after that photo, actually went UA from the Marine Corps, and they had to charge him and throw him in the brig. The poster boy recon.
Great
of
poster,
the 90s.
Though.
Great poster, yeah, absolutely.
I had that poster right next to my Navy SEAL poster in school. yes.
So yeah, I went in there and I talked to them And, you know, of course, recruiters are like, oh, yeah, come on, you know, guy that looks in shape. And, you know, like, they're like, oh, this guy's a great candidate. And then they start talking to me and they're like, what? What? You did what? Well, let me run a background check. And then let me have you take this ASVAB test. Okay. And then, oh, you haven't even graduated? Oh, yeah, that's a hard no, man. And they did a background check and it came back 2 felonies, misdemeanors. My ASVAB score was in the tank. I was just a hard pass across the board. And I actually made a video about who I am. It's one of the channel trailers. I don't know if you saw that 3-minute video, but it was literally the worst thing that they could ever tell me was no. Cause like the person, I mean, I'm like, and still to this day,
it's almost a good motivator. I personally love it. Somebody can
now
tell
is,
me no.
Now it's to a fault at 38 years old. I'm like, please don't tell me no. Cause I'm going to go crazy. And then I'm going to go down this whole rabbit hole that I probably shouldn't even go down anyway, you know? But it's like something triggers in my brain, the rebellious part of my brain triggers. And I'm like, okay, I'll show you. So I did. So yeah, it took almost 2 years, but ended up going to college because
you had to get like 12 credits or something. 12
credits. And I think it's still that way. You do a semester in college and that trumps the GED. And now you're actually a college student, not a high school person. So,
right.
So that trumps that. I ended up getting over 100 individual letters of recommendation. And good my mom work. Helped me with that. But I was every person that ever knew me, or even like my parole officer, people that knew me from getting in trouble, churches, people, my old employers, you know, from back when I was 11 years old, I went to my first job and I was like, hey, can I get a letter of recommendation? And so I had a stack. And then I had to study for the ASVAB. I took the ASVAB 3 times. Because when you have a GED, you can't just get a score. You have to get over a certain score. So, and I wasn't the greatest, you know, school person back then. You know, now I'm finished wrapping up my master's program with like a 3.75. So it's amazing.
Nice. Isn't that awesome?
Age. Yeah, it's amazing what age will do to you. So all these kids that hit me up are like, I'm not good in school. I'm like, listen, neither was I. I was a DC student, C on a grid day, mainly a D student. So there's not a lot of weight there, in my opinion, as far as the weight of a man. I think that kind of stuff can be taught, you know, if there's a passion there. So I did all that and then went, you know, it took me almost 2 years, and then ended up finally going right before I turned 19.
Okay. Before 19, how were you physically? Were you prepared for what you were about to endure?
Physically, you know, and you know this, back then things were different. The amount of people that were overweight were not what it is today.
It's probably doubled.
Yeah. Probably, society has changed, and I'm not gonna blame it on the internet, social media, even though that I do think that's a cause. But I think overall, it's our food, it's our lifestyle. But I didn't have that. I worked full time. I was one of those kids that I think I read in Men's Health that you're not supposed to lift weights until you're 14. Do you remember that old saying?
Yeah. I
think they were passing that around back then.
Yeah, I was lifting weights at 12. So.
I didn't grow up with my father. I didn't really have anybody in the fitness world that back then. So I read this thing, and so I said at 14 I'm gonna start lifting weights. So at 14 I got a membership to Nationwide Fitness in Panama City, and I bought the bodybuilding Bible from Arnold.
Oh yeah, classic.
Classic,
I,
right?
I had that I was one, like, of course.
I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm gonna get this book. So I got that, and that's where I started. And man, I couldn't put weight on to save my life, but I was lifting weights and doing my thing. But I did actually make a decent amount of progress. And so as far as like true strength and conditioning, like training like an athlete, no, I never did that. But I just did what I could do. But the active lifestyle and not having the internet, really, like there was no internet.
Yeah.
If you wanted to hang out, you got your friends and you guys hung out at the beach and you threw a football and you did things and go camping and hiking. And that was our life. That was the normal lifestyle in the 90s for the majority of people.
Sure.
So while I wasn't training to be a tactical athlete, I was overall as a young man, just somewhat physically fit.
Yeah, and I think for the most part too, if you are that person, you know, you can get through even probably what many refer to as the hardest basic military training.
Yeah, recruit would be training,
the
right.
With the
you can
would
get
be the Marine Corps, I would think would be harder than all the others.
Definitely harder than the Air Force, I'll say that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, most of my guys, whenever you know they're trying to go to SEAL or you know some other spec ops job in the Navy, they will get out of shape at boot camp. You know, boot camp will get you out of shape if you are preparing for.
Well, and that's what I tell. That's what I tell my young men as well. Is like could you go through and make it? Sure, but you're going to have a degradation of physical capability while you're there because of nutrition, sleep, you know, schedule, whatever.
Yeah.
So imagine if you could have a 350 PFT on a good day. Like if your best day, you're primed, you get an imaginary number of 350. So on your worst day, when you're underfed, you're underslept, you still get a 300.
Yeah, you got to build in some gravy there for sure.
Right.
You got to have some gravy time in there. So, all right.
So I did well. I did well, but knowing what we know now, I could have done a lot better. I mean, I still graduated. I did all that. 7 days in, I break my wrist.
Oh, man, you're just full of like, you're peaking bam. You got all
life sometimes just wants to put me down, and I got to fight back a little bit. But I ended up recovering from that, and ended up graduating number one in the company.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah. So I took that opportunity to kind of level up and like, okay, well, this is a shitty situation. I'm going to make the most out of it, study, get myself back to where I need to be so that I can, you know, achieve something.
Nice. Yeah. Being in that holding cell, I guess, or platoon, you know, while you're waiting, rollback land, we call it. And,
Stu, I want you to think about this in Marine Corps recruit training, you speak in the third person.
Oh, yeah.
So imagine 5.5 months of speaking in the third person. What that does to your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, that is rough.
Leaving that island after 5.5 months was an interesting thing. might have a little bit of Stockholm syndrome, I think, going on. But
That's funny. So... So tell me about this. What did you learn about yourself when you made it through all that? Was there any particular, outcome to, you know, going down this journey, becoming a military, becoming a Marine? What did you learn about yourself in that?
I think early on, and you know, keep in mind, I'm a 19-year-old young man. I think out the gate, it became clear to me that you can achieve something, but you have to persevere that adversity. Like everything that you want is on the other side of fear, and everything you want is through that adversity, right? And a lot of people hit that wall and they just go, oh, there's a wall. Shit.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Well, it sounds like your whole life was hitting walls.
Absolutely.
And finding ways to get over them, under them, around them.
And I'm by no means the strongest, fastest, smartest individual. I consider myself very, very average. Almost every person that I've ever worked with in a unit, I feel is better than me. The difference being with me and the rest of my peers is that I just didn't quit. That's it. I don't feel like I'm any different from anybody else other than I just, when I hit the wall, I just navigated around it or through it.
Nice. That is something that it's hard to teach.
Yeah. And people say, oh, you're a badass and you're this. And you're like, no, man, I'm really not. Like there's people that can do a lot more pull-ups than me, that can run faster than me, that are smarter than me. The difference is just, because of my life and the way that I grew up, I just, you know, hard-headed, I guess. I hear that no, and I figure it out.
Nothing wrong with that. That's awesome. So Where'd you go after you graduated Marine Corps boot camp?
So I went to, so the interesting thing, because I got hurt, I signed up for infantry, which this is a bittersweet story. I signed up for infantry, got hurt, lost my boat space. For those who don't listen, they don't know what that is. It's basically like essentially your space on the boat to go to that MOS.
Right. Your billet.
Your billet, your layman's terms. Yeah. And so I didn't have an MOS. I went to Saul. They were like, hey, guide, go see this master sergeant. I sir. And, you know, he's like, hey, I'm going to give you the best job in the Marine Corps. I said, I sir. He goes, sign here. I sir. Signed there. Didn't know what it was. Ended up going to MCT, which was the non-infantry. It's like what the Marine Corps, if you're non-combat arms MOS, you go to MCT, which is Marine Combat Training. It's like 2 or 3 weeks. And you do all the basic stuff, and then you go to MOS school. And I ended up being an administrative Marine.
Oh, wow.
For about a half a second. Yeah.
Now, how did you maneuver through that process? Because that's, you know,
when
you have
well.
A job, you're going to do that job.
You know? Not well. I actually got in trouble out the gate early on, out the gate. I showed, you got to think, like, my mentality, like, I just accomplished all this stuff. I became, you know, the company honor grad out of boot camp. You know, I'm physically fit. I'm a high performer in the Marine Corps at that age. I'm a motivated Marine. I'm ready to go accomplish, you know, an objective. And then I show up and I realize that I'm an admin Marine. And then I checked in to a NCO who was, you know, slightly overweight. And as you can imagine, that just being a young Marine, not knowing what was going on, I didn't handle it well. You know what I mean? I didn't handle it well. And I might have said some things as a junior Marine, as a PFC in the Marine Corps to an NCO that probably were not professional, even though if they were truthful. So I shredded paper for 3 weeks. My first 3 weeks in the fleet, I shredded paper for 8 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how did you make that transition out of that job and into recon?
Really good leadership, honestly. There was a 0369, you know, in the wing. I was actually on a wing unit, an admin unit at New River. And there were some good NCOs that saw that I was a capable Marine, just in the wrong spot. So they kind of took care of me in that direction. I ended up going to a very early on. I went to NCO school as an E3, and then went on a board, and they immediately shipped me overseas in 2002, right after September 11th to Turkey.
Wow.
Yeah, so I did a security billet out in Turkey for 7 months, and just kind of changed my entire life. And so I never really did the admin job. I was doing that individual augment billet. I'm doing some personal security work and structural security work out there.
Nice.
for Operation Northern Watch, which those who don't know turned into Operation Iraqi Freedom. That's the Operation Northern Watch and Southern Watch is what Operation Iraqi Freedom came out of.
Yeah.
Anyways, and I came back and I pinned on E5, pinned on Sergeant, and I had never done my job.
Wow.
So Sergeant Major McAvoy, who's like a force recon legend, was a Sergeant Major on that base at another unit. And he basically said, don't be a pussy and go recon. And I didn't really know what that was. So he hooked me up with the screening team, which at the time was Gunny Durbin, which I think he just retired as a Master Guns. And I did the screening on a 96 in like 30 degree weather
that screening weekend. Explain a little bit about that screening weekend that they do.
This would have been December. This would have been this right before Christmas. It was like the 96 around Christmas, December of 03. And you know, back then it's a little bit more. Because of MARSOC and because of everything going on with special operations within the Marine Corps now, their screening is a little bit more robust because they screen kind of for everything.
Sure.
And so you have to run, you know, you run your PFT, you have to do max push-ups, and then you get in the pool, and then you do your 500-meter swim. And
with camis on, right?
Oh, yeah.
You get to wear your camis? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
People who, like, don't really practice that, their first time ever doing it, I mean, it's an eye-opener. You might be able to swim great without, you know, swimsuit on, but you throw
put those cargo pockets on, and those things create some drag. Yeah. So, and it's not, you know, you have to do, I think it's 14:30 and 14:30, 500-meter swim. Yeah. You cannot let up. I mean, there's no let up. It's 100% from the time you get in the water until the time you hit that wall and you're done with 500 meters. And, they actually got a picture, and I can actually send it to you. The Marine Corps Times was there, and they took a photo finish of me like hitting the wall, of me coming up out of the wall of my breaststroke, and ended up on the thing, which didn't pay well for me when I showed up to recon and indoctrination platoon. It said go recon. It had me coming up with the number five, fun. That number five on my forehead, you know? And, they came out of the office when I showed up to rip, and they were like, "Who is this?" And I immediately was like, "That guy," to my friend. I was like, "That's him right there," right under the bus. But I paid dearly for that for months, and then of course it followed me around most of my recon career.
That's pretty fun. Now, how long were you in recon before you moved on into?
So after that screening, I went to Second Force. I spent a year at Second Force Reconnaissance Company. Ended up in a platoon right before we were going to deploy. They needed sergeants to go to the 3rd Recon Battalion, and I was pissed. So anybody listen to this story. I was so mad because I felt like I was going from the majors to the minors. And a master sergeant told me, he was basically, he's like, "Listen, I understand what you're thinking, but you're wrong. Like, this is going to be the best thing that you ever did." So I actually went out to Okinawa, ended up extending from 1 year to 3 years, took my whole family out there, and ended up doing almost 3 deployments. So I was an assistant team leader when I showed up, a team leader in combat. And then when I came back, I picked up as a platoon sergeant.
And that was in battalion recon.
You were
in a battalion? You were force or
third battalion? Third recon. Well, back then it was a little different.
Right.
So what they would do is they had a company, and you'd have a recon platoon, and then you'd have a deep reconnaissance platoon, like a force platoon.
Right.
And you would rotate. So I got to do both. So my first time out there was that, and then we kind of switched to the RNS. So I was able to do both, plus we went to Iraq. But in the reconnaissance community, they used to be saying, like, all the good reconnaissance Marines come from 3rd Recon.
Okay.
Because you have to do everything.
Okay.
Because and there's nothing else to do. So guess what you do?
Train.
24/7. You train.
Yeah.
You train in the jungle. You train in the water. You train in the house. You do everything that other units are really focused, hypersensitive, like hyper-focused on one kind of training. There, you're hyper-focused on your entire MOS.
That was good advice.
Yeah. So I came back and I was just a high caliber. So in 2006, Second Force rolled up its flag, and then they became Second Marine, what now is Second Marine Raider Battalion.
Right.
And I had a deal. I said, "Hey, I'm going to go over here for 3 years, but I want to come back to Second Force." Well, at that time it was rolled over. So 2007, I came back in December of 2007, I checked into Second Raider Battalion. And then went to selection, and that was it. I was there until I got out in November 2012.
That's awesome. I tell you, in my experience with dealing with change in a military organization is it doesn't go very well at first.
No.
Typically. So, like, I heard this.
We're not good for change, are we?
When you throw change, it's kind of like the best analogy I've heard is that, you know, you might be able to clip an elephant's toenails, but getting it to change direction you're not going to be able to do that. So how was that transition for you? You know, because you were pretty much in a historical time in the Marine Corps, you know, to stand up that Raider battalion again, because they hadn't been part of the Marines since World War II. So how And I know that was a naming process that happened a little bit later.
Long, but,
you know,
yeah.
Whenever you came in, you know, and people were thinking MARSOC. I mean, because it was a forever. I mean, they were never part of SOCOM since the 80s when it began, because
they asked, the Marine Corps thought that they were like, no, thanks, we're special already. So,
right.
Which we already, we still deal with that sometimes as well.
But, you know, I understand that too. I mean, because, you know, your generals don't want to lose a whole bunch of guys that are going to go
right
away from the Marine Corps. So how did that all, you know, what were some of the unique things that you noticed that the Marine Corps itself overcame?
I'll talk about it on more of an individual level. So I was fortunate enough that if I rewind and go back to Third Recon, we were a force platoon, and we went all over the Southeast Asia doing that mission. Spent a bunch of time in the Philippines and whatnot. And being a SEAL, you know for a fact, when you do direct action, if you train for direct action, that becomes kind of your life. That's like your persona. Like, that's what we do, right? We kick in doors and we go get the bad guys and blah, blah, blah. But transitioning from that to a asymmetrical warfare train of thought, right, is sometimes difficult. So you got these force guys that wanted this all the time, right? And then we trans over, and then it was like, it wasn't so much about direct action all the time. While that's one subset of a mission, that wasn't the primary thing. Plus, you got to look at what was going on in the world at the time in Afghanistan and Iraq, and predominantly Afghanistan at that time. And so there were some struggles there on transferring that train of thought. Some people did it really well and some people didn't. And I think that's where the struggle happened as far as the transition, all the way up to the executive leadership level.
Sure.
And for me personally, and a lot of my peers, though, because of Iraq, because I went from a force platoon to Iraq, and we kept doing direct action stuff initially, and nothing was getting done. You probably know this, like, you were playing whack-a-mole, and you know, you'd take a guy and nothing would change. Like, absolutely nothing would change on the battlefield space. And so we went back to, so our platoon went back to old school reconnaissance, old school talking to people, building relationships, doing urban hide sites to where, and then moving every 24 hours to where they couldn't, you know, real true, you know, asymmetrical operations within a village.
Right. Kind of making your own intel packages and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like with a small platoon and what we accomplished in that village, outside of Fallujah, there was companies and battalions of infantry that couldn't do it. Yeah. We completely took out all the IDs. We killed a bunch of people, like all the bad guys, you know, and we ended up taking care of families that were in the village. And that something clicked to me. It was like, okay, you can play whack-a-mole with, there's a place for that. But true special operations is, how do you manipulate the battle space? And that's what clicked in me. So when I went over when I left Recon and then went over to MARSOC, it was just for me, it was a smooth mental transition as far as I understand what the mission is now. I understand how to manipulate a battlefield to where we can change that space. We can take it from, somewhere that we're fighting from into white space. How do you work with, you know, indigenous people to, and that became our whole mission with, you know, while I was in Afghanistan. I mean, my last deployment was, we had a 314 man surrogate force doing, you know, VSO work, riding around on motorcycles all over the bill, but it was completely locked down. We knew exactly, I could walk with a pistol in this up to a certain line. And then I knew, like, okay, time to put the battle rattle on, because that's our line. But entire village was essentially at peace and had, you know, now of course it's a lot of things changed since then, but
sure,
at that time. So it was, for me, it was very, very, is a very clear understanding of where we were taking, where, what special operations was, at least for our mission set and what we needed to do. And then some of the higher executive levels still wanted to be like, you know, to be honest, I think that they kind of wanted to have more of like a SEAL mission, you know, more of a direct action mission. But that's not what SOCOM needed. That was not what America right. needed. So it took some time for guys to get promoted, you know, from our level and sure. kind of see a bigger picture. And anyways.
Do you feel that not only the journey that the Marines had, but the journey that MARSOC has had, that the selection program now is really focused on creating that mindset that you discovered yourself?
Honestly, it was from the get-go, and I was pissed. Because keep in mind, I was a staff sergeant. I had been at force. I had been a platoon sergeant. Now I'm showing back up to my old unit, and they're like, you got to go through selection. I'm like, Jesus, how many times do I got to prove myself? And you know the answer to that every sure. day, right?
Yeah.
Every day you got to prove yourself. So, but I was a little butthurt. But when I went to selection and I saw what was going on there, and we had a bunch of contractors from some of our other former units that was help, you know, kind of guide that space. And it's very, you know, a lot of it's very similar to SFANS and mm-hmm. things like yep. that. But once I went through it as a staff NCO, I kind of stepped back and looked at it and I said, this is an amazing product. You know, I was like, I can't be mad for making me go through them. So I'm glad that I went through selection and got selected
yeah.
Because I was able to see the product that they were creating and what they were selecting for. And I was like, this is an amazing, amazing situation. And there was actually recon Marines that did not get selected and they shouldn't wow. be selected, you know? And
yeah.
so that's what really proved it to me. I was like, okay, that guy at the time, I didn't know he was a recon Marine. But there's a handful of them that just didn't get selected. And the truth is they shouldn't have been, you
yeah,
know,
you know, so it was a good system. I remember going through some schools and I just thought I am better because I just went through this school.
Absolutely.
You know, then there's some schools that were just like, oh God, this is a waste of time.
Yeah.
But for the
Airborne being one of them.
Oh
for
my
me.
God. Yeah. Did you go to Fort Benning?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
So did I.
Three yep. weeks of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Standing on the ropes for 3 weeks.
Funny. I went to Fort Benning in 92 with, my entire buds class. So it was just a mess.
Oh, I bet that. I bet they love that.
It was a complete mess. And we would spend our weekends in Panama City in the 90s. So
I was there.
We may have crossed paths.
Probably did.
In an earlier life.
I was running amok down there at that time. yeah. And you know what? I think I went in 2004. And I will tell you that from the time you went to the time I went, nothing had changed. And
yeah, it's pretty much 3 days of training crammed into 3 weeks.
I actually ended up in the same barracks that my grandfather did when he went through, I think, in the 50s.
That's really cool.
Nothing had changed except I think they had upgraded the parachute maybe once since the 50s, maybe twice.
Yeah.
But not
I'll tell you what, though. They put a lot of people through that course.
They do. Yeah.
I got to give them quantity has a quality all its own.
They have a gauntlet for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
But anyway, so I was very happy to go through selection and on the tail end of it. And then I actually right before I left the service, I got the opportunity to cadre a selection, which was awesome as well. So I got to see both sides of it. And man, I'll tell you what, they have figured out a way to make an awesome product.
And they've yeah, that's got what I've heard. And they take it from the entire Marine Corps too. Like you don't yeah. have to be coming from infantry.
No.
Yeah. That's really a neat process that they do that. All right. So there's a point where you decided to make a transition and no longer be in the Marine Corps. What was that? Circumstances or
no, honestly, and anybody that the only people that can relate with this is people like, you know, Jeff and yourself and people that understand it. I got burnt out. I was very smart. So from my very first deployment, I was able to navigate from one unit to the next and always stay deployed. So,
yeah.
And I never, you know, how if you have to like take a knee and you go do, you do a schoolhouse, you know, and you have to like go do some sort of billet to where you don't have to be on a team or deploy. Right.
Right.
Anyways, so I navigated that well because I wanted to, because we were at wartime, I always wanted to stay relevant. My information, my training, I wanted to stay relevant to the command. So I just did that. I navigated that. But the takeaway of that is you just get, you know, one deployment, one workup after the next, you know, for 12 years. I ended up being gone for 6 out of the 12 for my family. Like yeah. we tallied it up. It was a full 6 years completely gone. And so it mentally just took a toll. I just started becoming kind of a bitter, angry person. You've probably seen those guys.
Of course.
As you, you know, as you get in the military longer, there's always that senior staff and CO that's just like walking around with a cup of coffee with maybe a little something extra. He's just angry. He's angry at the world. And that was kind of, I was turning into that person. And I just did not, and I saw some of my senior leadership that way. And I was like, I don't want to be, this is not what I want for my life. So, I pulled chocks.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I served a whole 8 years and it wasn't during a wartime. So you still get burned out.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of what
it's
you're
a,
doing.
It's so a, it's a, understand. It's a very high intense lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I've studied like, you know, endocrine system, adrenaline fatigue, like there's a million, there's all kinds of stuff that goes
there's
around.
There's a physiological factor to it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And now after the fact, I'm smart enough to, I've identified a lot of different things, hormones, you know, Jeff was on the cutting edge of this.
Oh, absolutely.
Before he got out and he was identifying, trying to put some things in place to help people. And honestly, I think a lot of his work is what has led to some of the good things that are happening in SOCOM now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The human performance side is not just about building strong bodies.
Not at all.
You know,
no.
You know, in fact, it's
keeping families together and
keeping families together, stress mitigation,
right.
All of that and dealing with stress as a psychological and physiological entity.
Yeah.
You got to get
it. So that was it in a nutshell. And I just, I was burnt out and, you know, there was some politics of the, you know, the military and on a mental physical level, I was progressing faster than the military would allow me because there's a rank structure and there's a time asada, you know, and there's evals and all this kind of stuff. And I was operating at almost executive level.
Yeah. And, I see that.
But your rank is what your rank is.
Right. Yeah. You know, that's a good point. You probably had some other things going on in your mind too, of what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
As well. So
what
you're
wanting to accomplish.
Know, yeah. Things like that. So how was that transition? First of all, everybody who gets out of the military after 10, 12 years, that transition is you go from being the angry, cranky guy, and now you just changed your complete world. It's upside down now. And that transition is really hard.
It is horrible.
Yeah. It's really hard transition.
It was horrible because, honestly, like, not to get into, like, a Debbie Downer, but I don't know if Jeff's talked on this about this with you, but him and I have talked a lot in depth. He's actually in my audiobook talking about it. But you and I both know, like, when you're in these kind of units and you have this kind of badge on your chest, it's not just what you do. It's who you are. It's part of your identity, you know, and when
and
you
your
leave that and yeah, and your family's identity. Yeah. Yeah. And like the neighborhood you live in and the kids that your kids hang out with, and it's your whole life.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, it really is like a television show. You know what I mean? And when you take that away, you lose all that. So there's a real big identity crisis that happens. And I had that. I was like, if I'm not the Nick, the recon Marine, if I'm not Nick, the Raider, what am I? Who am I and what do I want in life? And there was a two-year process there. Luckily for me, I had some really good people in my corner. Jeff and I got out about the same time, and we almost met right at that transition. But going through that transition, failing a ton, you know, having to deal with, there was things that I had not dealt with from combat in 2006 that hit me square in the face in 2013. And I'm calling my buddies and I'm like, what is going on with me, man? And they're like, yeah, dude, we got out in 2007. We've been dealing with it. We were dealing with that shit back then, you know? And like, but I continued, I never stopped. So that baggage never really caught up with me, which, you know, not to plug, but that's how this got written.
That's what this is for. In fact, we're in that phase right now. We're talking about what you do now. So plug away.
So this is this book, the you know, the Excommunicated Warrior, the Seven Stages of Transition, was something once I got through it and I started to work with other people and work with youth and work with, you know, my now peer group, I started to realize that transition and those kind of issues, leaving a, you know, a high speed unit, really isn't a veteran thing. It's not a military thing. It's a human being thing that we all go through. We all go through some sort of transition, whether it's a divorce, a loss of a loved one, loss of a job. Life is full of chapters, and sometimes we get stuck and we don't know how to like move to the next one, you know, or we're afraid that the last one was the best one we've ever done and life's all downhill from here. And that's all simply not the case. It's a perspective shift. And that book is about the seven stages of transition. I've had moms that have, you know, been stay-at-home moms for 20 years, and then their kids leave the nest and they don't know what to do. And they read this and they go, you have no idea how reading the story in the seven stages applied to me. I felt like I was reading my story, because it really is a human being thing. But it took me a couple years. Luckily, my now wife, we're expecting my first son, so this will be kid number three for me, was a big part of that. She was a big part of that transition, and, you know, identifying some things that, you know, maybe I didn't want to hear, but that's what they're good for, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you need to educate your spouse on exactly what to look for, because you will not see it.
You will not see it. Yeah. So that was a big part. And I had some really great mentors, Jeff being one of them, and a friend that just, you know, made it known that it wasn't, the problem wasn't as, what is it is, I don't know how to say it, like finite. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's not a final, the problem is not final. It's just a perception thing and a growth thing. But if you have the strength and if you have the fortitude to deal with it, you can move past it and you can live your best. Like the next chapter might be the best chapter. That's what I feel like now. Like this chapter of my life, I feel is really the best chapter of my life, not what I did in the military, you know?
Yeah. Very, so. Very, very true point. When was it that you found out during this transition? Because here's what happened to me is that I actually went back almost to when I was a candidate again, like my mindset of being a candidate of like, I wanted to go join special operations, you know, whatever I could. Right. So almost went back to the very basic mindset that I had when I was a wannabe.
Uh-huh.
Right. And like you probably, someone put a wall in front of you and now you got to get up over around it or under it. You know, when was it that you connected like that thing?
Go back to the basics.
Yeah. When did you connect?
Once I got through it, like once I got kind of like three quarters of the way through the seven stages that's in the book, something hit me and I was like, oh, I'm not a badass. I'm not this. I need to get real humble and go right back to the basics. And I need to humble myself and I need to start learning from everyone around me. I don't know any. Basically, it's like you said, go back to that recruit, that candidate level, you know, and go, okay, what do you know? And I need, okay, whatever you say, I'm going to try that. And I just went on this journey of self-exploration of I'm going to try all the physical stuff. I'm going to try all the mental stuff. If you tell me that meditating on donkeys in a desert is the way to do it, all right, man, let's cross legs and let's get on this donkey. Like, I was just open to to really explore all the physical and mental aspects, even spiritual aspects of becoming better. And I didn't allow myself to like, oh, that's stupid, or that's gay, or that's, you know, that right. All the macho stuff. I'm like, no, man, you know, I'm gonna lay in bed. I'm gonna do a mega wave meditation, sleep stuff. I'm gonna hook all this stuff up to, I'm gonna see how I can become the best human being and that I can now.
Nice.
Both in performance and mental. But that's work.
You know,
that's effort and work. So that was about 2 years. I made that decision, like, okay, I'm going to do everything. I went to a brain clinic in Texas. I anything that there was, I did breathing therapy. If you can believe that's a true thing, which I believe in, and it works.
Oh, absolutely. And so, we can control our nervous system simply by breathing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that kind of stuff is what, you know, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because I really did. I was like, I took away my ego and I took away everything that I thought I knew. And I said, what can I learn from this? What can I learn from you? You know, I don't know anything. Teach me something. And then when that shifted, it just kind of opened the world up to me, and it allowed me to learn a bunch of things and grow past what I used to be.
Yeah, that's exactly how I had to handle transition as well, because I was missing people, missing buddies, missing the job. And, you know, that's the big three, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I realized that if I treat this part of my life the same way I did as a selection that I had to prepare for,
right,
I would come out better on the other end. So that's really, you know, like you know, just mentorship, you know, seeking mentors, listening to people, learning new stuff, and getting out there.
I like that you said that. Life's a selection, right?
Yeah.
It is, always.
The next chapter is another, you're a candidate in the next chapter.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And it can be the best one yet. It can be the very, very best one if you want it to be, and if you allow it to be, you know?
All right. So now let's talk about entrepreneurial Nick Koumoulatsos. What is going on, and how are you doing now with your businesses? I know you got multiple things going on. And when I look at you, I see like all these balls up in the air that you're juggling right now. And
that I drop is that other people are picking them up. They're like, stop putting balls up. We can only catch so many.
It's awesome to see, you know, because you have to diversify. That's one thing that I have learned long ago, is that you got to diversify your ways of
life,
your business.
Yeah.
And it's very helpful. So explain to everybody, like, what you're doing now, where they can find you, more information.
So the easiest way to find me is just my name. Good luck on that. But
you know, I figured I didn't have to spell the whole thing. I did Nick, and just started Koo. Yeah, I went on YouTube.
And it pops up.
First, go to YouTube, right?
Go
to YouTube and type that in, KOU, and then it'll pop up.
It'll pop up.
Yeah.
With the entrepreneurial stuff, I started my first business shortly after contracting. When I got out of contracting for a couple of years. And then I started my first business. I consider it, we did great things. We traveled all over the world. You know, we made some decent money, but I consider it overall a failure. But that failure is what led me to the next thing and to the next thing and to the next thing. And if you allow, you know, I always tell people, if you fail, you show me somebody who failed, you know, or somebody that's successful, and I show you the same person who failed 15 times for that one success.
Easily.
But you always only see the one success. You don't see all the, you know, the bankruptcies and all the other bad stuff behind the scenes. So that was kind of it. I started one thing. That one thing, you know, gave me the opportunity to do another thing. And then we opened a gym, and, you know, and then the YouTube stuff kicked off. I met Johnny with Johnny Slicks. And then now that's in 3 years has turned into a 7-figure business.
Nice.
And
what is Johnny Slicks? Explain that real quick.
Johnny Slicks is an organic grooming company. So this guy, he hounded me for six, he was making stuff on his own, and he had no website. He would just DM him an address and PayPal him or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But he hounded me for 6 months. I ignored him. And finally he got a hold of me, and I said, hey, drop some product off. I used it for 3 weeks and I said, oh, I'm partnering with this guy. Like we're going to make this thing huge.
Now this is all for like beards and
no. We only have two, and because we both have beards, people sometimes think it's only beards. We only have two beard products out of 40 products. Two beard products. Yeah. So body wash, shampoo and conditioner.
Okay.
Scrub, all kinds of different stuff. We have a ladies line called Mrs. Slicks. So that's been very exciting. So for me, what I was able to do was take all those failures that I had and go, I know what not to do. So it's made all these other businesses much easier to grow. Especially on the coaching side, you know, being able to help people like that, like much like you do. Uh-huh. And it's just because of 4 years of failures, it's just a lot easier to know what to do, what to listen to, how to listen to the consumer, how to listen to their customers of what they want, and then just give it to them. If you listen to them, listen to their questions, you know, like for instance, our training book and what we're doing with coaching now, that was not my idea. That was because I got 100 DMs a day saying, hey, I'm not passing my IST. You're a Marine Raider. Do you know anything about how to train to go to selection or go to join the boot camp? And I'm like, well, matter of fact, I do. And that's what gave birth to a whole business, essentially, is because I just listened to what people want. And that was something that I had to learn early on, was I thought it was all about my ideas and what I want to do in a business, when really it's what do they need and how can I deliver that to them?
You know, that's a really good point. One thing that has helped me for 20 years now is I answer all of my emails, and there's a lot.
It's hard, right?
It's hundreds a day, right? And now I have some signature answers that I give to probably 50-60% of them and say, here, go here, you got it.
Yeah.
But they give me ideas to write. They give me ideas to create programming, mm-hmm. you know, because I see what people need.
Right.
And you're exactly right. You know,
and you have the experience to be able to offer that.
Yeah. And one thing I've learned too is fitness is a huge world and there's plenty of room for all of us to play around in it too. So, you know, I look at what you're doing. I'm like, this is great. You know, people are getting firsthand knowledge of how to be a recon Marine, how to be in the MARSOC program, you know, how to make it through Marine Corps boot camp and get, you know, recruited and successfully. That's an invaluable, you know, platform that you have. And, you know,
that's all because they asked for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never would have done it on my own. All of that and you know, is just kind of progressed 1 year at a time to where we're here today. And I love every second of it. I think it's great.
All right. So what's next for Nick Kumalatsos?
What's next for Nick? Next for Nick is this baby.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's all hands on deck right there.
Luckily enough for me, I finished the master's program in July, and then he comes August 9th. So that is pretty much, so right now, busting my ass and work to set everything up, because I really, you know, and now at the age of my life I'm at, you know, I miss a lot with my girls. So this one I really want to enjoy. So we'll get through this coronavirus stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's just going to be dad, mom, and son time for a few months, probably for the rest of the year.
That's great. Enjoy that. Cause they're little for just way
it
too
goes fast,
short
right?
a time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I've experienced that. My oldest is just graduated high school early. She's starting college soon. You know, the other one's about to turn 14. It's like, I can't even grasp them anymore. It feels like yesterday were like little, I was holding little babies.
Yeah. You know? I know. Yeah. It is a blink. So I guess let me just end this. So I remember seeing you for the first time. It was at a tactical strength and conditioning conference. You were given a keynote speak. speech for that event. I think that was really close to when you were transitioning out, if I'm right.
No. I was, that was,
had you been out for a while?
I've been out for a while. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
And you're also involved with, some organizations as well. You explain a little bit about
the Raider Project.
Yeah.
So that's our nonprofit to kind of, you know, that's our, you know, nonprofit world to where we are able to do some things for some veterans as far as that transition, not making the mistakes that a lot of people go through, kind of taking the concepts of growth and health, and be able to provide that to veterans that want it. And what we realized was we realized there's a lot of nonprofits out there that were doing a lot of great things, but not ones that were out there doing, let's say, the education piece. How do I show someone that it's okay to not be the tough guy anymore? How can I get them the tools? So how could I take a guy rock climbing, and while we're rock climbing, empower him with the tools to solve his problems on Monday instead of just like a hunting trip? And then it's like, oh, this weekend was great. And then you show back up to your wife and kids on Monday and life still sucks. It's like, wait a minute, I had a great weekend. Maybe you guys are the problem.
That's
what I'm saying. So how can I equip veterans with the tools to be successful on their own? So when that problem arrives on Monday, they go, oh, wow. Nick talked about this, you know, and this is the solution for it. You know, or, you know, Kirk or whoever we bring out to offer these kind of solutions help, you know, so they have, you know, and there's a lot more that goes into it, but it really is that education piece and that empowering piece of transition that to teach them that things are different, but it's okay to be different. It's okay for you to be different, you know?
Right. Oh, that's very worthwhile. Thank you for doing that. That's, because like I said, you and I discussed it just briefly that transition affects us all differently, you know, no matter what it is.
So one of the things we just did was we wrapped up we had 22 people. We did a marriage seminar because we found that, you know, if we can make sure the wife and the husband are doing good, or, you know, whoever your significant other is, you know, your girlfriend, whatever. If that relationship is solid and you have a good communication base there, and that becomes your new team, you know, you had your team and your platoon and your squad, but now if you can make your family the same, at the same level and the same feeling of importance, then they're much more successful. So we're starting to rope in families and wives and others, because we just see a higher success rate.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely critical. Yeah. Very good. So where can people find you?
YouTube. Do that. Nick Koumalatsos on YouTube. Start there, and then, you know, my website, and I'm all over.
From there, nickkoumalatsos.com.
Yeah.
Is that right? And they from there, you can see everything that you
do.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Everything's one-stop shop.
And
you
then,
you have a great Instagram.
Thank you.
Page.
Yeah, you can DM me. I'm the same as you. I try to respond to every single person.
Nice.
So, yeah, if anybody needs anything, hit me up.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. Any last words for
I think one of the smartest things I ever heard you say was, and this was the thing I wanted to bring up. I was just like, this is brilliant. I'm so glad somebody said it. You said, and hopefully I get it right, as you age, you can't out-train your calories.
Yeah, close to it. I always say you can't outwork your diet.
You can't outwork your diet. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially after 40. After 40, it's absolutely like you just give up. You can't outwork your diet. If you're going to try to outwork your diet, you're just going to get injured.
I quote you a lot to our clients that, you know, that are people that are, you know, mid-30s to mid-40s that are, you know, that have overweight, and they like, well, I used to do this. I'm like, yeah, man. You know, and you have a lot of young trainers out in the world saying, no, you can eat 3,600 calories a day.
Oh, sure. Eat that pizza.
Yeah. You can eat all this
stuff.
Have
a six pack.
As long as you train, you can, you know, you can have a six pack and you can lose weight. And it's like, sure. If you're 22, you know, if you're 22, 24 years old, yes, you can do that. I did that too. But you know, you, as you age, you can't. And I was just like, thank you. Somebody smart said it.
Yeah. I tell you what, I wrote a series of workouts for, you know, the tactical fitness over 40. And that's like the first paragraph is like, you can't outwork your diet anymore.
Nope.
You know, has to be incorporated with smart eating, and largely, you know, we mainly, you know, probably eat healthy. You know, I eat very healthy, but my portion control can be out of control.
I can still eat like I was when I was 24.
Yes. That's the problem.
But that's not what I need.
I can eat an extra steak. I can eat an extra piece of chicken. You know, good for me foods. Just too many
too
calories.
Much.
There you can't outwork it. So, well, thank you very much. And like I said, first time I saw you, I was it was at that TSAC conference where you're the keynote speaker. So I'm like, wow, who's this guy? And then I found out you're a Marine. I'm like, wow, he's got cool hair for a Marine.
Something about leaving the Marine Corps. You just gotta be your own person.
Oh man, I really appreciate your time. Luckily, I got you in a time where we all have nothing but time right now.
That's
with
right.
this shelter in place stuff. So I'm glad it worked out. I'm glad we made some good out of
absolute honor to be on the channel.
Well, thank you very much for, like I said, participating, and I can't thank you enough for what you've done for our country and what you're continuing to do now, helping others and moving in that direction. So thank you so much.
Excellent.